Welcome back to the Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley.
I'm Rias Hall.
How are you doing, Rias?
I'm okay. I'm getting over a sore throat, so my voice might be a little bit more scratchy than usual this week. But
it's husky. It's smoky.
It's husky. It's sensual.
Oh, yeah. So, Rias, let's talk about the format of this podcast.
Okay. You know, one of the problems we're having with this podcast is that there's not that much reality TV to talk about that we can stand to watch.
Yeah. Now, I know how it sounds when we say there's not that much reality TV. Yes, there's a ton of reality TV. But we kind of carved out, like, this real specific niche of competitive reality shows where people are making something. And, you know, that's not The Masked Singer.
No.
So, what we're going to do is, and stay with us, we're going to change the format of the show while still retaining the cool name, The Villain Edit, and the awesome hosts, Monty and Rias.
Hello, it's me, Rias.
We're going to be a little more villain-focused. And exactly, thank you. And that's going to hopefully, basically, find something to talk about when there isn't a show about dressing shop windows.
Yes. Man, I loved that show.
So,
I mean, we are still watching reality shows, and we can talk about them, but most of them are on Netflix, and which is probably good, because people can also watch them. But that isn't going to hold up as the sole feature of our show.
Right. So, here we go. New format, where we're going to talk about villains and villainy. And I just thought of a great name for the
inaugural episode?
No, for the main segment. Welcome to the Villain Audit. Where each week we're going to pick a villain and really investigate, is this person a villain? How villainous is this person? And because we are nothing if not topical, the inaugural subject of the Villain Audit is Billy McFarland of the Fyre Festival.
He is definitely a villain.
If you'd like to know more about him, you can watch a great documentary on Hulu called Fyre Fraud, F-Y-R-E, or a great documentary on Netflix called Fyre, and then something like The Greatest Festival That Never Happened.
The Greatest Party That Never Happened.
Yeah.
And it's spelled F-Y-R-E.
And this is about that huge Fyre Festival catastrophe that happened last year. And the main focus on both of them is what an awful person this Billy McFarland guy is.
Right. Now, for those of you who might be unfamiliar with the Fyre Festival, it was allegedly, here's how it was advertised. We've got a private island. It used to belong to Pablo Escobar.
It's covered in supermodels and wild swimming pigs.
If you come to this island for our music festival, you will be flown in on a private jet. You will be put up in an extremely fancy camping facility.
There's going to be gourmet food and supermodels and
all the bands that you like.
Which, to be perfectly honest, I only recognize, like, a couple of the bands they kept talking about.
Yeah.
They sounded pretty confident that they were a big deal.
Right.
And, you know, so, you know, the structure of this sort of thing, they pay Kendall Jenner $250,000 to make an Instagram post, and then they're huge.
Right. They paid a lot of everybody that had a certain, anyone who was considered an Instagram influencer.
Anyone who's anyone, darling.
Yes. Was paid a huge amount of money so that at the same time, on the same day, they would post this orange square, which was a link to the Fyre Festival. And then people would click on the orange square, they would see the amazing commercial that was made with the blue waters and the jet skis and the supermodels.
And then the hype continued unabated until people actually got to the island and discovered that it was not what had been advertised. And then they were locked in an airport until the next morning, and then eventually got to fly home.
Yes. But it wasn't just being locked in an airport. First, they showed up on the island. They were taken to a restaurant owned by one of the island people. They were given tons and tons of alcohol.
The worst thing that could possibly happen.
Yes. Actually, yes. And then they went to see their beautiful accommodations, which turned out to be FEMA tents.
It's these cool little domes, which, in the right context, I would not mind.
No, but it had rained the night before, and the mattresses had not yet been put in the tents, so all the mattresses were soaked. The tents were full of water. It was awful.
And the way all this happened was essentially Billy McFarlane lying to people over and over again and borrowing money to pay off the previous people he borrowed money from.
Yeah.
Until finally it all blew up in his face.
So what had Billy McFarlane done before the Fyre Festival?
Oh, when he was a young villain-to-be, he invented a black card. Because if you have a debit card, it's boring. But if you have a metal black card, it's cool. And he did this just by copying the information on the magnetic stripe.
Right, which so it wouldn't was your work. Same, it was your same. It was the same card you always had, as it's going to the same bank account with the same information, but it was black and made of metal.
This is essentially what people who defraud your credit card do. Like, this is why they invented chips in cards, so people wouldn't be able to do this.
Right.
So he had this thing that was sort of a product, and then he turned it into a club. Like, you pay me $250 a year, you get this black card, and you can come to our clubhouse in New York. And by day, it's a co-working space. And by night, it's crazy parties. And eventually, he got thrown out of that because of the crazy parties.
Yeah, the crazy parties got him thrown out of the penthouse suite that he had rented as a workspace / party space. Also, the people who went to the parties were not the supermodel celebrities that audiences were hoping for.
And then he invented an app that was supposed to make it easier to book celebrities for your parties, which I believe they have agents for that. And that got him in touch with Ja Rule, who...
Right.
I don't know anything about Ja Rule. I've heard his name a lot. I don't know his music.
Okay. Well, the Fyre app was, let's say that your daughter is turning 16 and you want Beyonce...
I'm so proud.
And you want Beyonce to play at her party. The Fyre app, what it basically does is you enter all the information you want and it sends an email to Beyonce's agent who then gets back with you.
Yeah.
So basically it just saves you looking up who various people are managed by, which in this age of Google is not that hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, really, I feel like there's a celebrity party planner out there who has everybody's agent's email address and that's who you hook up with. Like,
yeah,
oh, they did young Ashley's party, so.
But that's what the Fyre app was.
Right, and then to promote that, they ended up on the idea of having a big music festival. And the big music festival, they had no idea how to do.
And they decided at 4 months out, they were having a music festival.
Now, there's a series on Netflix called 7 Days Out, which I really enjoy.
Which shows,
essentially, the preparation that happens before a giant event. So if you watch the one for the Westminster Dog Show, I couldn't remember if it was a kennel club or what. On one of the days, you see the people at Madison Square Garden rolling out all of the AstroTurf and marking off the spaces for booths.
Yeah.
And these are the people that were not involved in the Fyre Festival at all.
At all, no.
In the Netflix one, you see people trying to get the higher-ups to care about stuff like having enough toilets because you've picked an island without plumbing. And they're just like, we don't want to talk about toilets. One of them had a great idea. He was going to bring a cruise ship in, and that's going to be the offshore hotel.
Right, and then you just shuttle people back and forth from the cruise ship. Everybody gets... people have rooms.
Rooms, kitchens,
showers,
bathrooms, all taken care of in something that's plausibly luxurious because it's a cruise ship. But they said, no, we're not doing that. And
then they fired him. He was also the guy that said, there's no plumbing, you're going to need to bring in bathrooms.
Yeah.
He was the sensible guy they hired, and then they fired him because no.
Yeah, I like 7 Days Out because it's all the sensible people who have done events and know what's required.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to need this, 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 and this. Here's the union that serves this thing. Here's our specs that we've given them. Yeah.
Whereas on the Fyre Festival, everything that went wrong, and even if things weren't wrong exactly, like you have to pay customs on this because you're bringing it into a foreign country, hit them as a huge surprise. So, I want to talk about the dude, Billy. Now, he hits many of the traits of being a villain, and we don't have these codified yet, but he certainly, based on the two documentaries, is a bad person. And I think that's the primary element, that he does bad things and doesn't seem to care about it.
Yeah, he is... I don't know if he's an actual sociopath.
He plays one on TV.
But, man, the fact that 2 days out he could have canceled it.
Or...
And everyone on the thing was saying, we have no place for them to stay, there's no food, you fired the caterer because they were too expensive. But we can still cancel this and at least save face.
Yeah, he let people get on the planes to go to what he knew was not a ready situation. Also, after the Fyre Festival, once he's been arrested and he's out on bail, the way the Hulu documentary put it was, when you're out on bail is the time in your life when you want to be doing the least amount of crimes. Instead, he started up a whole new project where you try to sell VIP tickets to things you cannot buy tickets for, like the Met Gala.
Right, the Met Gala is invitation only.
As the Netflix documentary points out, everybody at the Met Gala has to be personally approved by Anna Wintour. And if you watch the non-documentary The Devil Wears Prada, you will get some idea of how difficult it is to get approval from Anna Wintour.
Yes, she is... not known for being the kindest woman.
So he's got this plan to sell VIP tickets to things like that or the Victoria's Secret fashion show. And the first thing he does is send the solicitation email out to all the Fyre Festival people, who, most of whom, having recently been burned, recognize this as a scam.
But they don't know it's him because it's a completely different name. He's hiding his identity. He's got a front man doing this for him.
Although, because they have... It's... All they have to do is email their friends and or text their friends and say, hey, did you get this email? Because now they're sending, like, an email a day saying, hey, friend, how would you like to go to, I don't know, the Super Bowl? You can sit on the field!
It was that kind of promise. It was ridiculous.
So, very quickly, people are like, why am I getting these? And meanwhile, Billy is doing this in his Manhattan apartment, or penthouse apartment, with cameras documenting the whole thing.
Yeah, he's got a documentary film crew in here filming him committing more crimes.
So I'm going to say that's something that brings you up from being a bad guy to being a villain, is the scale on which he does it. And, like, he wants... He's proud of the big things he's doing, even if the big things are... Clearly fraudulent.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's such a...
It's baffling how villainous this real person has managed to be. And he's still pretty young.
How proud he is of himself for doing this stuff. He's like, well, I'm doing this. And it's all about his ego.
Yeah, like...
Just he wants to be the guy. He wants to be the hookup. But he doesn't have any actual thing to hook people up with.
He's in the Hulu documentary because they paid him some amount of money that he says was $250,000 and they say was not. But why is he there? Billy, what do you think you can say? His plan is just to look the camera dead in the lens and say, oh, we didn't lie.
Yeah, he denies it. Everything. They're like, did you do this? No. And then they're like, well, here's the receipt for when you did that. And he's like, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
Like, you, sir, are so wrong.
You clearly lied about how many assets your company has. No, I didn't. We had that money. Well, here's your bank account. No, it's not.
Yeah, it's like when you accuse a 5-year-old of something and it's obvious that they did it and they're like, no.
Yeah, so...
No.
He's not just a bad guy. In this characteristic, he is a villain. I will say, stylistically, I'd like to see a bit more out of him.
Yeah, he's just kind of a college-y frat boy douchey-looking dude.
Yeah. If he's going to be... this might be the difference between villain and supervillain, but he needs, like, shoulder pads and maybe a helmet.
Yeah.
My favorite villains really look cool, like...
Yeah, he doesn't look like a villain. He just looks like a jackass, which I guess is technically what he is.
That's a good...
Come on, dude. Get some Terry Moogler to design you some villain clothes.
It's probably a good move if you're going to be a fraud villain, not to look too villainous, like right up front. Like, you can't right away start cackling and tenting your fingertips while this...
That's true, and much of this guy's leadership technique is based on glad-handing.
Oh, what he does is he makes you feel like the biggest guy in the room until you say you can't do it. Are you not a team player? You're out. And now he's surrounded by people who want to make Billy happy because Billy's approval is what runs this thing.
Yeah, it's gross. It's
super gross.
He's horrible.
Yeah.
They talk to people, like, both documentaries are good. The Netflix documentary is much more professionally made.
Yeah, I think so.
Where they talk to... the thing I like more about the Netflix documentary was they talk to the people who actually live on the island who got screwed over. Because it's much more interesting to me. It makes me like him... someone who defrauds a bunch of rich people.
Yeah, the focus on the Hulu documentary is these Instagram kids got screwed, but who cares? They're Instagram kids, which... I mean, it's still $10,000 that they set fire to.
Yeah.
They were off. If you look at the initial video, it's a real nice video. I want to go hang out with supermodels and swimming pigs.
You what?
I like pigs. But and it's pretty disingenuous the way both documentaries only show the influencers. There are some...
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. The Netflix documentary talked to the people who worked on it.
Well, hang on. What I mean is, some of the people who went were not influencers. They were suckers who got tricked by Billy and the unwitting accomplices, the influencers. We only see the real pretty people finding out that they have to stay in a tent instead of a villa. There are some... normal, you know, not pretty people.
Right. Who also just happened to have $10,000. Yeah.
But like you say, also victims, and not really brought up much in the Hulu documentary, is everybody on the island.
Right, because...
worked for free, essentially, because they did not get paid.
Yeah, they're like, you have to work 24-hour days. Every person who could walk on the island was basically setting up tents or doing stuff for these guys. Up until the planes arrived, and even a little bit after that.
Yeah.
And they never got paid. And that's what makes me mad.
When the first plane load of people arrive, they are dumped off at a local bar instead of the campsite. And the bar is suddenly completely slammed and does not get paid for any of the work that they do.
Also, the time that they have the fire festival, and they never mention this in the Netflix, but they do mention it in the Hulu thing, the island has a yearly boating regatta that is everybody, that it's like the big event on the island that year for the islanders. So the people that could work, that would normally work in that restaurant, are probably already asked for the weekend off.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And it's just, it's...
So, what we're saying is that Billy McFarlane, this dude is a villain.
Villain.
Villain. Sound effect. Ka-chunk.
Are we going to have to get a sound effect?
That I just did it. Ka-chunk.
Oh. Wow. Okay.
That's right. It's diegetic. Now, we're going to move to our new segment, Villain of the Week, where each of us brings a villain to talk about. Who's your villain of the week?
My villain of the week is Gia Gunn from RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season whatever.
4. See, I told you we weren't really changing that much. This is just, we're going to talk about many of the same things. We're just rearranging it a little to make it...
easier on ourselves. I mean, to make it better for our listeners.
Right. So, Gia, who has been a villain this season...
She did actually get the Real and For True Villain edit.
Yes. we saw her going up to people and saying, "So, you're pretty out of your depth, huh? Are you nervous about being here?" Which was, that was against Pheromone, and was countered by Farrah saying, "You know, some of us don't need to make up storylines in order to get screen time."
Which I thought was pretty funny, but then Farrah went home. Yeah. But
that's what's so great about RuPaul's Drag Race, though. People are allowed to say those things, and it makes it into the show. Like, on The Bachelor, the closest you get is like endless discussions of, is so-and-so here for the right reasons? But you rarely see someone say, "So you had that t-shirt made just so you could wear it on this TV show. Do you think you're going to sell more of that t-shirt later?" I'm specifically thinking about Waboom from a few seasons ago.
Oh, geez, don't, let's never, I never want to hear about Waboom ever again.
He got a villain edit just by being shown.
Just by being alive. He got the villain edit from childhood, I'm afraid.
So,
by the universe.
Gia was off the show, but then, shocking twist, had a chance to come back this week.
Well, in previous seasons that she has been on, Gia has always been...
A mixer?
A mixer. She likes to upset other people. She likes to upset and unbalance her opponents by kind of being mean to them. Now, one of the things about Gia is that she is a trans woman, which I kind of feel like...
It's a very complicated thing to be doing drag, which is...
When you're an actual woman.
Drag is a caricature of femininity, whereas being a trans woman is femininity.
Right, because you're... Yeah, it's like, I am a woman, and I have done drag, and it's not dressing up as men.
So,
and it's a complicated thing to parse.
Yes.
And I'm kind of mad that she did get the villain edit so much. Simply because she's... I mean, she is a well-known trans activist, and she does a lot of really positive work in the community. And it kind of sucks that they gave her that edit. But at the same time, you can't edit things people don't say.
Yeah. Like, it's a complicated situation. Because I agree, a trans woman on the only popular drag show is an interesting, nuanced situation. And mostly for Gia's first run on the All-Star show, it was reduced to... Here comes Gia. She's a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, and I felt a little bad about that. I think the thing that bothered me was when she came back this week to compete to see if she could come back on the show, but when she left, she was like, "You know, I really want to focus more on my activism and my transition and stuff. And I feel weird being here."
Yeah, when she left, I kind of felt like, okay, this might have been a bad idea for you. You're going
to
go home.
At this point, and maybe you're not, yeah, maybe you need to, maybe you have other things you'd rather be doing.
Right.
And that's totally fine. But yeah, I was upset because RuPaul's show has a history with the trans community. And maybe making the trans contestant the villain... I don't know, though. I mean, Peppermint was on, and she's trans last season.
And everybody loved Peppermint.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And to be fair, Gia is also amazing. Like,
yeah,
you look great.
Yeah.
Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well.
And who's your villain of the week?
My villain of the week is the Minions.
The Minions?
You might know of them as little yellow...
Those jackasses.
Listen... this week there was a thing on Twitter where you're supposed to post a positive, controversial film opinion. And I have several of those. I think Hudson Hawk is a good movie.
So do I.
I personally think the Star Wars prequels are fine and people should just get over it.
Agreed.
Like, I like Phantom Menace, and the other two are alright too. But the one I went with was, four simple words, the Minions are funny. And I stand by that.
Well, I'd like to argue that with you, but I kind of agree with you. I think the minions are funny. I think that the minions suffer from people hating them because they were so over-marketed. Like, when that Minions movie came out, you could not buy a tube of toothpaste without a picture of a Minion on the box.
You couldn't buy Twinkies without a picture of Minions on the box, which I think is pretty clever.
Because Twinkies are shaped like Minions.
Yeah. So they kind of had a Minion overlay in that cellophane that you rip past to get at the Twinkies.
Yeah, but I think we just were suffering. I think there was a Minion marketing mess.
Very nice. I will say, I'm not sure they needed their own movie. I did kind of enjoy their own movie. But when they're in the Despicable Me movies,
they're a delight.
They are deployed very well. I just watched Despicable Me 3. You get two or three Minion set pieces, and then back to the main plot.
No, that's, I think, good the work. Minions are... Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of the... And I think more of the anti-Minion backlash are from people who have children.
Oh, I understand that. If you have children, you are welcome to hate any cartoon that you are forced to watch a million times.
Exactly. That song, Let It Go, from Frozen, is amazing. But you can tell who the parents in the room are when you start singing it. Like, everybody just looks... The room goes silent.
That happens when I sing anyway, because my voice is so beautiful.
It's mellifluous.
Everybody wants to stop and listen to me. Let it go. Let it go.
You wanted the dog not to bark, and then you made that sound on the podcast?
That's right, I did. And I think that will wrap up the first episode of the rebooted The Villain Edit.
Okay.
A show more about villainy.
Yes, we're in more about villainy in the future. We're going to try to get on a regular recording schedule.
Yes, the advantage of this is we'll actually be able to record ahead of time. So if there's a week where nothing happens, we'll be ready. So we're going to start coming out on a regular schedule every Monday morning.
And I think that we'll probably still talk about reality TV, like a couple of shows we've been watching.
Reality
we're
shows.
Have a segment for that, but I don't think it's going to be the full podcast anymore because that run out of time.
But
stuff to say.
Yeah, we will find a way to wedge it in. A lot of times, reality shows have villains, or if they don't have anything, like Curse of Oak Island. If there's something I want to say, we'll find a way to work it in.
Okay.
We're just broadening and narrowing our focus at the same time.
Because who knows? What if they discover something on Oak Island? You guys are going to want to hear it from us first.
They had a really successful episode this week. They found, like, three things.
They did. They may not have anything to do with the treasure pit, but they found them, and good for them. It was actually made me feel a little better about all the time I've wasted watching them find a rock.
That's right. Okay, totes dyslex.
Totes dyslex.